especially in immigrant households, households in general, I feel like parents intentionally will set the bar really, really, really high, not really expecting their kids to cross them. But if they feel like if they set the bar really, really high, most kids will at least end up middle. Yeah. And they can live with that when they're 20, when they're in their 20s. So that's kind of where the logic may come by.
I was certainly put down a certain path in education. My father told me when I first started playing football in middle school, don't get too caught up on these sports. You're gonna be a medical doctor. I'll never forget it. And ever since, he had put me into camps. He had given me books to read, focusing on being a medical doctor. I started out as a biochemistry major, and he had a friend who was in admissions. And he said, no, don't let him do biochemistry because it's too similar to everyone else. Let him do math. So my dad made me major in math. He said he wouldn't take care of like my expenses and help me out if I didn't do math. So I do have a math degree that I don't use because it was the wishes of my father.
I have a cousin right now who is brilliant, 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 brilliant. But the current situation financially, because of the debt she's, you know, accumulated, is horrible. And now she's like, oh, I regret if I had thought about it, I wouldn't have gotten this degree and then this degree from these private colleges. I would have just, you know, done something generic, had a job, and lived life. But I don't know. I think it's bragging rights as far as education. I think it's definitely important. I would definitely want to see my nieces and my children to pursue an education. But I would want them to pursue something that makes them happy, not because somebody else said to do it.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm Perrine.
And I am Sky.
All right, Sky, so what actually got you to the career path that you are on right now?
Oh, that is a long, convoluted story.
Let's shorten it a bit.
No, I'm gonna shorten it. So it all started back in 1998. No, I'm kidding.
I'm like, what? What a specific year when you're only like nine.
It was actually January 7th,
okay,
1998.
There was snow.
It was a Tuesday. And no, this is North Carolina. There was not snow on the ground. Okay. Anyway, so I went into undergrad thinking I was going to become a doctor. And that did not happen. I graduated with a degree in communication studies / media studies, which to this day, my mom does not understand what I did for 4 years and then did for another 3 years after that. And so then I was, you know, doing the videography thing, multimedia production. I was the director of multimedia production at a small nonprofit. And so after that, I decided, you know what, I really want to go back to school, and ended up going to Virginia and getting my master's in mental health counseling. If you ask me right now, am I a therapist? I am not, actually. I am on my pathway to become a licensed professional counselor, but I've taken a little bit of a detour. I'm currently working in higher education, student affairs, and loving what I do. And so on the side, I do some therapy and some counseling, but my primary, like, bread and butter, 9 to 5 to 10 to 12, because I work a lot of hours, is higher ed.
Gotcha. And where is that higher ed?
I am at Duke University. Little plug here. I'm at Duke University Center for Sexual and Gender Diversity. It is an amazing place. If you are ever on campus, please stop by and say hey.
But you're at Duke.
Yeah, but they pay the bills.
You're right.
Pay off my Carolina student loans.
Okay.
So Duke fair is paying enough, UNC.
Fair enough. That's real. That's a great way to look at it.
Yep.
That's a great way to look at it. Okay, cool. I'm sorry. So Sky and I actually both were in the Department of Communication Studies.
Woo-woo.
I also received a degree in the Communication Studies Department, but I also double majored in broadcast journalism. Why do you ask? Because I wanted, and I still do want to be Oprah Winfrey.
Oprah's everything.
Okay, who doesn't though?
But like, exactly.
Can you please be original?
But I wanted the
like
talk
I want
show.
Someone to be like I want to be Al Roker
to dive like, deep and have cultural influence. And I was like, oh, like what did Oprah do? How did she get here? And like I studied it, and I was like, oh, she did local news and oh, like broadcast. I even did like my senior project in high school about broadcast.
On Oprah? Oh, okay.
No, well, I would have, but they just didn't say it was like a broad enough topic. But if you ask me.
Oh my
like
gosh.
2017 Oprah, got all these. Okay, anyway, I can go on in Oprah. Like
clearly, binge. My goodness.
So I wanted to be Oprah, and I'm not. But while
you sound
I was
so disappointed, like I just thought one day I would grow up and be Oprah.
Oh my god!
And I just look in the mirror every day, and I don't see those eyes staring back at me.
Stop.
Stedman is nowhere to be found. There is no vineyard. Gail is not going to go on a road trip with me.
We have similarities.
You're both black.
I'll just say that. We have similarities, and
women.
We'll leave it at that.
Black
so,
women. That's it, y'all.
Anyways.
She ain't rich.
While I was at UNC for undergrad, I was very involved. Sky and I were both very involved in student television. Mm-hmm. We did a ton with STV. Shout out to STV and their productions.
Yes.
And,
Carolina Style, Hyphenated.
Yes.
What
Late
else
Night, STV.
Late Night.
Man
Everything
on the
else
street.
That we did, because I can't remember. It was
thing.
So many things, I don't remember anymore.
Right. So we were very, like, involved as far as, like, the broadcasting aspect that linked to our majors as far as extracurricular activities. And so people, like, always knew that about me. But I always loved fashion. And so I always loved fashion. I always loved entertainment news. And so the show that I worked on was called Carolina Style that I created at UNC. And it was about fashion and, you know, budgets and all that good stuff and fashion trends. And
we
so,
started the series by burying a scorch. It was amazing.
Yes,
in like an actual graveyard, though. Like we were literally in a cemetery, y'all.
We literally, like I went to Goodwill, got a skirt, and put it in a box. My boyfriend Brandon was the pastor, and we were all there in black, burying the skirt.
And nobody was crying because we were not sad to see it go. Because
it still needs to go. And it's
oh yeah,
still
no, it's
living.
Dead. We buried it. So
I hope it dies. But
Revenge of the Skirt. Summer 2017.
You're so creepy. No one should wear skirts. And
we still love you if you wear skirts, by the way. Like we still love and respect you, listeners.
Do we? So when we did, you know, do all that good stuff on campus, I was involved with like our modeling troupe, Concept of Colors, where we did all these fashion shows that like made the costumes, I modeled. So obviously fashion had a huge impact on my identity, who I was. So when I graduated, you know, I moved to Atlanta, I got an awesome internship with CNN, and it was great, but at the same time, like the path for a journalist, specifically a reporter mm-hmm. in journalism is start at the bottom, and do local news and have crazy hours and work every holiday.
But you want to be Oprah though.
And I understand that, but at the same time, like I just wasn't about that life.
So you don't want to be Oprah.
I personally was not about that life. And though I really loved the art of storytelling, that was like the number one thing that I loved about journalism and I love about journalism and hint, why this podcast exists. It was definitely something that I just didn't necessarily see myself, you know, pursuing as far as being a reporter. And so, you know, I worked a few jobs and whatnot, but then I moved back home to Greensboro, North Carolina, tried to refocus my life and did a lot of visual merchandising with a lot of different like retail stores and specifically one that I worked in, and I was really building up my portfolio and not even realizing it. And then one of my great friends actually moved to Greensboro to get his master's, and we developed our own small community organization called I Am Fashion. Shout out to Joshua Jenkins, killing it in D.C.
Yes, and he is. He's amazing.
He's amazing. So we started I Am Fashion, and we were able to give a lot of local designers platforms and able to show their merchandise, and we did a series of fashion events. So I used that to actually do research and figure out what I wanted to do ultimately. I always loved the fashion industry, but I loved the business side of it and the business aspect. And so I looked for a program that was fitting those needs, and I found that in Savannah College of Art and Design, SCAD.
Also known,
oh, were you gonna?
Oh, I just ruined that. I was gonna say also known as SCAD. I was trying to be cute.
Dang it, you are cute.
I'm sorry.
I should have let you do that.
Y'all can't see how cute I am, but I am.
Oh my God. So I moved back to Atlanta, Georgia. I love Atlanta. Shout out to all my ATL shops.
That's where I S T A Y back to. That's my jam. Go ahead, sorry.
Sky also lived in Atlanta.
I did.
So
I loved
she
it.
She also has a love for
the
city.
I actually started the trend of seeing an internship and then
preen. You did. She started
the
all
next
the trends.
Year was like, oh, I guess I can get a CNN internship too.
You're so silly. Okay, so the really amazing thing, and Sky doesn't know this because I never am like completely honest with her when it comes to anything like positive. Ooh, as far as
wait.
Sky, you're amazing.
Wait,
but
damn
Sky again. Definitely was always like an inspiration for me because, like, I don't want to say she was a step ahead because that's giving her too much credit.
Ooh.
But Sky, I always was very admirable at her ability to literally see a goal, conquer it. She would move, she would uproot, she would go to all these different cities. She lived in Atlanta, she lived in D.C., she always found jobs like very quickly, and I was like, how is this possible? And I always admired that so much about her because that really lit a fire underneath my butt to get my life together. So it is very interesting. It's like, Sky lived in Atlanta. I could live in Atlanta. Sky lived in D.C. Well, no, let me go to New York. Like, so I definitely...
Big difference, but, you know, I'm just not a New York kind of girl. But
I definitely, I admire you. I mean, I admire you just as a human, but
thank you.
Growing up and trying to figure out like my career path, I really admired how many risks you took in figuring out your own. And so, you know, I finally got to grad school at SCAD and I felt like I found my people. Like that program was so amazing. It was luxury and fashion management. I got my master's in fine arts, my MFA, because I took a ton of business finance classes that I will promote that I survived. And, I felt like I was able to learn about branding and marketing and supply chain and really what makes a brand full and full. And I utilize that in my everyday life. I currently work as a brand stylist for Belk headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Oh, fancy. Major retailer, y'all.
Major. So I do a lot of clothing, merchandise, fashion, trend stuff on a day-to-day. But my broadcast, obviously, our love for broadcast is still very apparent in our lives.
Yes. And thank you for saying that. That was really sweet of you.
I heart you.
I heart you as well.
Girl, love fest. So, I mean, Sky and I know really just like the struggles of just trying to figure out like what your purpose is. Like,
yes, I went through at least 15 majors.
At least.
Yeah, before I finally, like, settled. I was changing, like, I feel like most people don't know their college advisor or counselor or whatever very well. But, like, I was up in her office all the time because I was just like, you know what? Actually, no. So I don't want to be pre-med anymore. What I'm really thinking about is, like, dance. I'm just going to be a dancer. And then, like, a week later, okay, you know what? Like, I don't know how to dance. I could keep rhythm, but I don't know what I'm doing out there. So how about, like, I don't know, comparative literature? And then I came back like, I don't want to read all them books.
Oh, my God. No,
and so on and so forth. But, like, really, I went through legit over 15 majors before I settled on communication studies. And as far as, like, Perrine mentioning, the ease of finding jobs for me, I went through tons of jobs to know that I did not want to do whatever that was that I just finished doing. So that was how I learned. I am an experiential learner, and so, like, I did take those risks. I did take those jobs, and because, I mean, I needed money. That was ultimately my thing, was I needed money, I needed experience, and the best way to do that was to start something and see if I wanted to finish it to the end, and like dropping it if it wasn't for me. And I think a lot of people are scared to drop things that aren't for them. Like they'll work in a job for so long in an industry for so long and not want to do it. Like would wake up every day dreading going to work. And I'm not about that life. Like it's not. And so like now every day, like I found this job that I love and I absolutely love going to work every day. Like I don't wake up in the morning. I may wake up in the morning and be like, ugh, because it's morning and I'm not a morning person. But like, as far as like, it's never like, I don't want to go to work. Exactly. It's like, ugh, it's morning. Okay. Let me take my behind to work because then the morning will get better.
Yeah. 100%. And it's very interesting because I think they say this all the time about millennials. We are millennials. And it's very interesting in contrast for us specifically as first gens in comparison to maybe the jobs or careers that our parents had, you know, in conjunction with our own. Not to say that they may not have done what they loved, but they may have done that from the get-go because they had to. They did that role because that was how to make ends meet. They did that role because that was their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. They did that because that's what they could do at the time, opposed to us where we're like, if we don't love it, if it's not what we cherish and what we feel is our purpose, like we're not going to do it. Like we're not going to just do it for their satisfaction. And I remember like when I told my mom I got into SCAD, I think she was like, first she was like, what is SCAD? Then she was like, what do you mean fashion school? You know, she really grilled it. And she really was not on board. She wasn't on board for a while. I think until I actually got to the school and was like telling her what I was doing. You know, like my sister was always like a big supporter and like a driver that encouraged me to like further my education and to really figure out what I love to do. But now like my mother and father both are like, they love fashion. They both love clothes and both have very distinctive fashion styles. And I think it's kind of interesting how I'm in that industry now because it wasn't something that my mom always like, maybe like was keen on like what I wore growing up and, you know, like what how I dressed and whatnot.
Parents never liked the way their children dress.
She hated it. Like at the point where she actually called one of my bosses at a retail store and told her that she did not think what I was wearing to work was like sufficient. I won't say appropriate. Wow. She called my boss, who is also Liberian, which is very funny. Ugh. But I worked in like a fast fashion place where we could wear cutoff shorts or we could wear a tank top or we could wear, you know, what overalls or something. And my mom's like, you're going to work and you're wearing that. So it's very interesting and kind of funny to look at it now. It's like, mama, I get paid to style people.
Like, and you thought I wasn't funny. Cute, girl. I told you that outfit was fly.
It's so funny because I style her when I'm home. I take her on fashion trips and get her new dresses and give her
fashion trips. I need to get that on. Can I get on a fashion trip?
On Mother's Day, I always get the Mother's Day dress. So I'm like, or I bring her dresses for occasions.
But you said fashion trip. I want to go on a fashion trip.
Oh, we'll get to that eventually. But you know,
she don't love me, yo.
I love you, but you know what I'm saying. Like, they're not always on board at first.
Yes, and I think that the thing for parents and particularly first gen parents, well, immigrant parents, is the idea of, I may not understand what you're doing, but if you're putting in this in a good work ethic and you are really dedicated and committed to what you're doing, I will support you, I guess, but I don't understand what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think most of it is, like you're saying, your mom wasn't supportive at first. Like most of it, I think, is fear.
Yeah.
Like the fear of the unknown and not knowing like what kind of job does this translate to?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they came to this country for a specific reason and part of the reason was to give us better lives. And so really being scared that we will squander that away. And so really, I think they pay a lot of attention to our work ethic to decide how seriously to take us and how seriously to take our careers. This is Diana's story.
I'm half Russian and half Armenian. guess, an American citizen. My parents' struggles were huge, right? So they came to the U.S. from Russia shortly after the perestroika, and they were, I think, like 22. My mom was like 22 or 23. My dad was 23 or 24. And I was 2. So they came to the U.S. With a like infant child, pretty much a baby, and they spoke no English. They didn't have jobs. They didn't have any family here. They didn't have anything. My parents had come to the U.S. with engineering degrees, and they had to start pretty much from scratch in America because it wasn't considered transferable or something. So my parents, you know, went to school and did the things they were supposed to do, and then went to another country and they're like, doesn't count, do it again. So they were broke, they had a child, they were immigrants living in just this really busted part of West Springfield, Massachusetts, where like the apartment that we lived in was so bad, like I had asthma for like years as a child because of the black mold that was growing in the walls. But looking back, there were absolutely things that we struggled through as a family. Some of them are funny. Like my mom tells me about how when they first came to the U.S., she went to like Walmart because that was the only place that we could afford to go to, Walmart and like Goodwill and secondhand stores. And she found like this beautiful like silky dress, and she was so proud of it. And so she was walking, like pushing the, you know, stroller with me in it, in this like beautiful silky dress. And then she encountered a neighbor who was like, Nina, why are you wearing a nightgown out in public? And she was like, people sleep in this? That was a real thing. So it was moments of dissonance like that, that are like really funny when you think about it. And then there were other obviously like really strong struggles. Like my parents got pulled over once, driving in the car with me, and they didn't know that car seats were a thing. My culture is heavily influenced by my Armenian background. So, you know, Russia's a humongous country, right? Like, it's just huge. And so it borders with a lot of different countries and cultures. And my family and my heritage and all of that comes from a specific region near Azerbaijan. And it's very influenced by a lot of, like, Turkish and some like Middle Eastern traditions and foods. Even like I'll go to like Polish Russian restaurants, and the food that they serve is like a weird offshoot of the food that I ate. And I often equate culture with food, probably because I also come from like a, you know, service and food service and culinary stuff. So I always think about culture as food. So when I go to like Polish Russian restaurants, I'm like, this is not the stuff I ate. So like, this is not my culture. But I go to Mediterranean restaurants and I'm like, this is what I ate. Throw in some like, you know, piroshki and then we're golden. It's weird. My parents always encouraged me to be really creative, and to like, they sent me to summer art after school programs. And I remember I did everything as a little kid. I took ballet lessons, swim lessons. I was on a swim team. I was on a soccer team. I was briefly on track. I did art classes, voice classes, piano classes. I even took horseback riding lessons, which was like the only thing that actually stuck in all of that. Swimming and horseback riding, that was it. They like threw me into everything. I don't know if it was because they wanted me to just like not do drugs or if they like wanted me to maybe experience things that they weren't able to experience when they were kids, or, you know, living that hashtag American dream. there's nature and nurture in every person, right? So my nature is like, I'm loud and I'm pretty sassy and I get the things. I set goals for myself and I really aggressively pursue them. But I also think that there's something to be said about the fact that I watched my parents, whether I was registering it as a child or not, I watched them work incredibly hard. I also think a big thing like in my personality is like when someone doesn't want me to do something, I like go for it even harder. My parents are engineers, right? My mom is like a CO2, in her last job, she was a CO2 optical laser engineer. People are like, so what is that? And I'm like, I don't know. You can call her and ask her. I have no idea. My dad does engineering stuff. I am a community college dropout, the apple of my parents' eye. Yeah, there's definitely like a bit of a disconnect there. I think that like now with me kind of in the last 2 years, I've really dived into this career path and kind of blazed my own trail and started doing things to kind of bring some more legitimacy to not just myself as a coffee professional, but also to the coffee industry in Charlotte and in the American South, that they're feeling a bit more like they can breathe. But definitely it was not their first choice for me. And they still ask me all the time if I'm ever planning on going back to school. Just like, you know, like they braved this treacherous journey across the entire world and like studied their, you know, to get their degrees all over again. And I'm choosing a career path to serve people coffee. So it's just like there's a bit of a dissonance there. They're coming around. I started working coffee about 6 years ago. So I, you know, started out working there and it was just a job for me to get away from being a lifeguard and a swim instructor, because that was like my watershed moment of like, man, I really don't like working with kids. So I like realized this, and then my friend was a barista and was like, oh, you should come work at this coffee shop that I work at. So I started out at the Dilworth and South Park Mall, then went to the Dilworth on East Boulevard, and just really started liking it. And it always kind of felt like I kept feeling like I was ceilinged out where I was, because the coffee industry, if we look at it, it's a pretty young industry. And so the South, the American South, tends to be a little bit behind in trends. And so where like coffee is on the West Coast or like in New York City, it's just now starting to trickle down to like Charlotte and other like more urban areas in the South. I remember working there and just being like really frustrated all the time. And after a couple of years and being like, I want to learn more. And I'm very like technically minded and operationally minded. So if I can understand why and how something is happening, like I can feel better about it. So I started taking like some coffee classes with Counterculture Coffee. And then a girl who worked at Central Coffee started a coffee shop called The Daily Press. And I went to go do stuff with her, and I spent about a year there, and that's like where I became like a full-fledged coffee nerd. You know, we had coffee professionals come in from like all over to teach coffee classes and teach things like brewing 101 and espresso extraction and tea 101 and the history of espresso machines and like all these different things. And we had so many people come out, like people not just from Charlotte, but people came in from other states to attend this event. And then we had like a huge latte art competition at the end of it. And I started getting really involved in the Charlotte coffee community. I started a Facebook group called the Charlotte Coffee Collective to try to bring Charlotte coffee people a little bit closer together. I left the Daily Press to go to Amelie's and was the assistant director of beverages there. And in the midst of all that, I became really involved with the Specialty Coffee Association and the Barista Guild of America, two really great organizations that exist to kind of create the standards for what coffee is in America and in the world. Started like getting involved in national coffee events and regional coffee events, and just like trying to like dig in as deep as I could to learn as much as I can. And I'm very fortunate that Undercurrent has been like a huge supporter of that. Now, I met a man named Todd Huber 6 months into my time at Amelie's. We just, you know, were like nice to each other, like humans do. And then he actually came to visit me at Amelie's at the Uptown location. And he mentioned, like, kind of vaguely, he was interested in opening up a coffee thing, but he had no experience. He spent 14 years working for Wells Fargo and was the director of the trade floor there. But he wanted to leave and wanted to, you know, start a coffee shop. And I was just like, yeah, dude, like, here, you know, I like printed out like a receipt paper and like wrote like, here's half a dozen books and here's like four websites you can look up and like, here's some organizations you can get plugged into and like, here's my email, my phone number, like, let's do something. And I just wanted to help him because like, I genuinely just am very hungry to see great coffee shops exist in Charlotte and a great coffee culture to exist in Charlotte. A couple weeks later, he basically, we got together and he was just like, I need to do this, but I need somebody who knows what they're doing. So he asked me to kind of join him. And then I found out, oh, the location's literally a mile and like a quarter from my house. And like, oh, like I sent him a like 3 or 4 page document that night being like, these are the things, if I were to open a shop, these are the things that like I would need to have happen. You know, like these are the employee programs I would want. These are the like coffee education programs I would want. These are the things that I would need to make myself feel like this was my home. And he like responded back and was like, yeah, all of this is exactly what I want. I was like, all right, sold. It just kind of worked out. So there's a lesson in there of like, keep putting yourself out there and just keep doing things and keep pushing yourself. And eventually you'll be in the right place at the right time because you've made sure that you're in every place at every time. So I'm not done succeeding, but I also think that a lot of them are attributed to my families, seeing my parents work so hard and then also being surrounded by good people. So I think there's something to be said again about like surrounding yourself with people that believe in you and encourage that drive, and also just seeing, being a part of a really awesome coffee community like we have in Charlotte. So I'm not like an island of just like excellence. A lot of people helped build me to where I am, and I want to create those opportunities for people in Charlotte. And so that's why Undercurrent is going to have an SCA accredited lab. That's why I've worked really hard to get my certifications to be an instructor and an examiner so that coffee professionals in Charlotte and the surrounding regions can come to Undercurrent, can come to our lab and become certified baristas and certified coffee professionals and can take courses that can certify them in their career. I think I'm just incredibly proud of my parents. When I think about my early 20s and what I was doing, it does not at all reflect what my parents were doing when they were my age. When my mom was 21, she had just had me or was pregnant with me, and she would go to grocery stores and there was no food. She had to flee her like town of Baku City in Azerbaijan because of Armenian and Azerbaijani conflict, where people were literally getting killed and pushed off of buildings and terrorized. My mom, when she was pregnant with me, wanted to, when they fled, my parents fled up to Russia, and on their way up stopped at a U.S. embassy in Moscow or St. Petersburg and applied to be U.S. citizens as refugees, and then moved farther up north. And my mom was homesick and wanted to go visit her parents that still lived in Baku City. And it was dangerous for her because she was married to an Armenian man. My grandparents, her parents, and my father insisted that she did not go. And she, being a headstrong woman, just was like, no, I'm doing it. I want to go visit my family. It'll be fine. And my dad, before he brought her to the airport to fly over, was like, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to call your parents in their home. And if they don't pick up, I am not letting you go. and they called and they didn't pick up. And so my dad didn't let her go. And then they got called later on that day and were told that a group of men showed up at my grandparents' house saying, "Where's Nina? We know she's coming. Where is she?" Ready to kill her. And she was like 20, pregnant with me, 2021. You know what I mean? Like, that's crazy. They sacrificed like pretty much a decade of their lives for a future that was not promised. But you know, I could have, you know, not taken advantage of that. You know, they gave up this huge thing. They made this massive sacrifice. I just think about like being overseas in a plane, flying. When I imagine it in the dark, like I imagine her flying at night with my dad and me. And I just like, I know you couldn't feasibly do this, but like see on one side, there's your homeland, and on the other side, there's this thing that you just don't know. Like you have no idea what's there. And just be like, there's no turning back. Like there's nothing else. I have to do this. And that takes so much courage. And that takes so much faith in yourself and in other things and in higher powers, maybe even to just make that leap. Like I'm nervous to even, you know, like move to the Northwest and like to think about going to another country and just starting from scratch. That's such a big move, and it's so admirable. And so if there's any one or thing to be proud of because of my bloodline, it's that courage to go like, you know what, this isn't working, and we're gonna figure out another way.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Make sure to leave a review or comment on social media. Just chat with us. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at FirstGens. That's #1, STGENS. Plus, get to know who we really are and get tons of extra content on our website. That's FirstGensPodcast.com. First Gens was created by Perrine DeShield. The show is co-hosted by Perrine and Sky Wilson. Trey Pierce, aka Self, is our audio engineer. Special thanks to our roundtable guests, Betty, Elvita, Chelsea, and Sean. And a huge round of applause and thank you to Diana for sharing her First Gen experience. Music from this podcast is listed by name and artist within credits. First Gens is a proud member of HOOGA, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thank you so much for all of your support.